As you said, my name is Jeff Beeger. I'm a manager with Deloitte Consulting. And based on that very descriptive, what that really means is I work mainly with my federal health clients. I'm doing a lot of kind of public health systems research and things like that. So today, when I looked over the other topics that are going to be presented today, I kind of realized I think it's good that I'm going first, because mine is a little bit more of a kind of a broad, I think, kind of macro-level perspective around some recent work that we have done and kind of looking at, you know, effective community-based partnerships and really looking outside of simply the health sector, but looking across kind of all potential partners in any given community, whether that be at the federal level, state, or local level. So the obligatory, I have no relationships to disclose. And just kind of real quick what I'm going to run through. So basic learning objectives, and then kind of really getting into who are our stakeholders. So when we think about when we want to implement a given program or a strategy in a community, who are our potential stakeholders that we work with? And then what are the benefits and the barriers of working with those stakeholders? And then finally, just a little case study example of some work that we had done recently. So here's just three learning objectives, looking at, you know, what are our key stakeholders involved in effective community-based strategies? And then how do we evaluate the benefits and barriers to engaging cross-sectoral representation? And finally, identifying the key program benefits from that collaboration. So when we think about traditional public health partners and stakeholders, it often plays out in a fairly hierarchical type of structure. So, you know, whether it be the funding streams or the different program streams, something similar. I mean, there's always a variation, but something similar to the federal, state, and local kind of the strategy. And often we're focused on kind of a health focus. So when I worked at the Louisiana Public Health Institute, when I worked at the National Network, our funding came from CDC. It came from the foundations and things like that. And we were responsible for the programs that went back up in that same kind of that fashion. But as many of us know, health organizations and health partners are not the only ones necessarily working in any given community. Oh, and there's the last one. Sorry about that. We cannot forget our community partners and community organizations. But then I would challenge us to think, you know, who are our potential partners? Beyond simply the historical kind of traditional health partners, who are our potential partners and the impact that those would have in our work? And this is, again, by no means all of them, but just to give you a sense. So we have the health sector, but we also have education. We have transportation. We have environment, agriculture, and defense. And there's many others. These are just kind of a sampling. But when we think about what it takes to have a community program, and I'll give an example here. When we have, you know, talk about healthy access to foods. Well, what's a major issue with that? Transportation. How does someone get a lower income, someone that doesn't have a car, how are they getting to that grocery store? If they're disability or something like that, again, how are they accessing those fresh foods and vegetables? But then so on the surface, they kind of make sense. It's a pretty easy thing to understand. But what may not be necessarily as easy to understand is when we mix it in. So we say, you know, when I was in health, we say, okay, well, make sure that grocery store, that Target, that Kroger, wherever you are, is on a public transportation line. Well, where I grew up, that happened. So they built public transportation lines that ended up at the parking lot 200 yards away from the front door of the grocery store. So with all the best intentions in the world, not knowing it and not necessarily engaging the correct partners, we've created another barrier. And that's where, if you look at things like what the EPA and many partners are doing with smart growth and things like that, so the idea of co-location and things like that. But those are kind of potential strategies that we wouldn't necessarily know about if we weren't engaging the right partners. And then overlaid that, again, is that kind of the more traditional. So at every level of government or every level of the country, at the federal level, the national level, at the state and territorial level, and then at the local level, all these kind of entities and potential stakeholders exist. And there's different ways that we can work kind of amongst all of them to do that. Now, that sounds great, and it sounds like, you know, a great way to affect positive health outcomes, but there's some obvious barriers that exist there. So I'll run just through some of those barriers. Pretty much an obvious one is the financial barrier. As we all know, kind of, you know, our funding streams come in different, mainly siloed ways, and it sometimes can be hard to either fund cross-sectoral partnerships. It can be hard to fund some of those programs, so it's often easy to kind of default to our categorical funding. related to that is kind of a silo admission. Sometimes it's really hard to get people who have been working in their specific field for a long time, especially if it's emergency preparedness in any given community, public works and things like that. Sometimes it's a little hard to get people to kind of take a step back and look at the full perspective when it comes to those programs. Third, competing priorities. Similar to the funding, there's only so much money out there, there's only so much time out there. And really focusing in on people, how can we most effectively leverage our partnerships and our stakeholders to do that work? And finally, information technology. And again, this is not all the barriers that are out there. There's many more, and if you have things that come to mind, I'd love to hear those. But information technology can be one. If we don't have systems that are talking to each other, it's hard sometimes to understand that the populations we're trying to serve and the different kind of categories, the demographics that I may think about from a health perspective may be very different than the demographics someone may think about from even an education perspective. So what are some of the benefits of having this cross-sector involvement? Interestingly enough, financial shows up again. So on the one side, there's an obvious financial barrier around how to kind of put money towards these things, but there's also a benefit that comes with that. If we can pool resources and we can pool funding, then we can have a bigger bang for our buck when it comes to some of those benefits. Innovative programs and initiatives. I mentioned the one about kind of access to services and things like that. A lot of the work that's happening at HUD, at the federal level, in terms of the co-location of health clinics with housing services and things like that, there's a lot of innovative programs, again, that, I think that I'm fairly smart, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there a lot smarter than I am, and a lot of different perspectives that can kind of bring that information to bear. Things that working, if you're in a silo from the health perspective, you may not take into consideration. And it, similar to my example just then about HUD, improved access. So if we're, again, language services, if we have people in community health clinics, are there opportunities from a, with different WIC programs, from educational programs, having those audiences where we can deliver either those services or at least information around those services in some of those settings. And the last one I'll talk about, improved outcomes. So that's really what we're getting at, and the rest of my fellow presenters here will be talking about some of those improved outcomes, and that's really the end goal, is getting to the improved health outcomes that can come from some of this. And to give you an example, so the case study example, something that I worked on recently, it came, again, from the federal perspective, but it was the National Prevention Strategy, and some of you may be familiar with this. This is something that came out of the Affordable Care Act, and as part of the Affordable Care Act was created the National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council, which was an ongoing body that made up of 17 federal agencies and chaired by the U.S. Surgeon General. But really, one of the first things that it did was create the National Prevention Strategy and kind of worked across those federal agencies. So it was the first time that all these different agencies were being brought together. And some of the ones that are on the board, similar to the sectors that I already talked about, health, obviously, was there at the table, Department of Defense, Department of Justice, Department of Education, FEC was there, Department of Agriculture, Transportation, Labor, kind of all the major organizations. And again, because all of them is really interesting to find out that all of them in many ways have programs focused on health. When you think about the Defense Department and health systems and things like that, one of the largest kind of overall health systems coming out of the Department of Defense, and the impact that they have as a military organization to really kind of affect some health changes that we can't necessarily do in the rest of society. So anyway, just some highlights here. Developed with input from stakeholders, the public, and an advisory group on prevention, health promotion, and integrative and public health. So again, pulling people not necessarily just from government, but from across all sectors, private sectors, academia, different foundations, and things like that, to inform the overall strategy. If you were here last year at APHA, there were listening sessions, so there was kind of public input that came out of that. I was the lucky one who's responsible for analyzing all public input, so thank you all for your input if you submitted it. And then again, federal agencies and private and public partners working together to help implement the strategy. And again, this was implemented, there's a reason that it was called the National Prevention Strategy, not the Federal Prevention Strategy. So really looking at national, state, tribal, and local levels. And then lastly, evidence-based recommendations that were implemented through the active engagement of all sectors of society to help achieve four broad strategic directions. So, and these kind of relate back to what we've already talked about in terms of when you're leveraging those partnerships. Building health and safe community environments, expanding quality preventive services in both clinical and community settings, empowering people to make healthy choices, and lastly, eliminating health disparities. So really the goal here, and this is just, I mean, there's many other examples, but I just want to provide one example that's from my recent memory of really an innovative way to kind of bring together those different sectors with an attempt. Not an easy thing to do, recognizing that, but in the end, hopefully, a pretty big payoff. And I'm sure all of you in the communities that you come from have examples where you've been able to effectively work with different stakeholders and different partners that you normally would not have. So with that, I'll turn it over to our next presenter. Thank you.